just puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, it's not often that we can tie current events to abandoned Manitoba, but that's what we're going to do today. With all the uncertainty in postal delivery in Canada right now, many people are worried about their letters not being delivered on time. But to give it some context, Gordon gave us a clue last week and told us about some letters here in Manitoba that have been waiting to be delivered to their destination for 160 years. Maybe that might make you feel better about your mail that has not been delivered yet. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadja.
So what are we talking about here?
We're talking about a collection of about 250 letters that were intended to be delivered to men who were working for the Hudson's Bay Company, of course, a fur trading company. They were rescued from obscurity by a woman named Judith Hudson Beatty Valenzuela, or just Judy Beatty for short. She rescued them from obscurity through her work at the Hudson's Bay Company Archives.
Okay, so just sum up for us briefly, what is the Hudson's Bay Company Archives?
Well, of course, it's a fur trading company. It, over the course of its years, in fact, it's the second oldest company in the world. It was established in 1670. It's got huge amounts of records. And when the corporate headquarters were moved from England to here in Canada, they thought, well, all of our corporate records are things like our documents, maps, architectural drawings, photos and films even, they were brought to Canada too. So in 1974, they actually put them at the provincial archives here in Manitoba. And in 1994, they were given to the province of Manitoba as a gift. It's a truly outstanding collection of material relating to Canada and to particularly northern Canada.
So what are these letters then as part of the archives?
Well, because the Hudson's Bay Company operated all over the place, particularly in Canada, but also what is now the United States, part of the state of Oregon, for example, the state of Washington. These men would work there, but they didn't have the Panama Canal. They would have to go all the way down around the southern end of South America to come back up. They would be away for years. And as a result, the family members they left behind in England or elsewhere in the British Isles often lost track of them. They didn't know where they were. They would send a letter saying, well, here's the news from folks at home. Write me back and let me know how you're doing. And so these letters would travel and, of course, hopefully catch up with the men to whom they're addressed. But they didn't always.
What do these letters look like?
Well, they are not quite like you'd think a letter should look like today. Most of them were simply one or more sheets of paper that would be folded so as to make an envelope. In other words, there wasn't a separate envelope. They'd fold them all up and then they'd seal them closed with a nice little daub of brightly colored wax. And the idea then is that this, they would have the name of the person on the front. They would might have a bit of an address of where it came from somewhere on it. It would be then delivered to the Hudson's Bay Company. They would put it on one of their ships and away it would go looking for the man to whom it was addressed. But of course, some of those men were no longer around. They had maybe deserted their posts. Some of them found better jobs somewhere else. They left and the Hudson's Bay Company didn't know where they were. They couldn't deliver the letter to them. Sometimes they died. Of course, you know, if you're out fur trading and you're in a canoe and the canoe capsizes, you drown. Nobody to deliver it to.
So these are all the unsent letters?
Yeah, well, they were sent, but they were never delivered.
Right.
And the company felt very strongly that they shouldn't just toss them out. So they would very carefully then send them back to the office in London. And there they would make some effort, I'm told, to find the recipients of the letters or find the people who had sent the letter. But if there wasn't a lot of detail in the letter as to who had sent it, well, sometimes they just couldn't track the people down. And there's the reason we get all of these undelivered letters.
You just showed me a picture of what one looked like, and something very interesting about how the words yeah. are kind of fitted onto the page.
Yeah, well, it was costly to send a letter in those days, and so people wanted to make the most of the space they had. So they would write the letter going left to right, and then they would turn the page 90 degrees and then write again going across the letters they'd written. And you'd think this would just be a mess. You'd be yeah. impossible to read it. But it's actually, with a little practice, it's not that hard. And you get, therefore, twice as much space to write your letter. It's called cross-writing.
Okay. Now tell me about Ms. Beatty. What does she have to do with these letters?
Well, she was an archivist at the Hudson's Bay Company Archives. The letters came to Canada in 1974 when all of the rest of the records of the Hudson's Bay Company came here. And she was wondering what she could learn about them. So she read them. She transcribed them. In fact, of course, a lot of them were written by people who were barely literate. And the words were therefore often very hard to decipher. She spent an awful long time working out what these letters said. And in the process of transcribing them, she added punctuation that would make them easier to read. She would correct badly misspelled words. Some of the words were just phonetically spelled. You look at them on the page and think, I can't even read that. But if you speak them aloud, sometimes it's easier to recognize the word when you speak it. She would sometimes explain words. There were arcane words that were no longer in common use. And so she provided an analysis of what the letter was actually saying. Mm. But perhaps most importantly, in addition to organizing these letters, she researched them. Mm. You know, what happened to the man that didn't get his letter? You know, did he drown? Did he come back? Did he eventually, you know, reconcile with his family? You know, these were the kind of stories that she was able to fill in, all these little missing tidbits from these various letters.
Can you give us a quick sense of the contents of these letters?
Well, they were often just heartbreaking. You know, they were written about a variety of themes, the concerns about their safety, the people who were writing the letter, worries about money. They were often, you know, mothers writing to their sons, women writing to their fathers, their brothers, their husbands, you know, telling them just how much they missed them, you know, because they hadn't seen these people sometimes for years. They didn't know if they're alive or dead. You know, it's absolutely, say, heartbreaking in some of these cases to see these letters. Well, in fact, I brought a short specimen that I thought maybe listeners might like to hear.
Well, you were meant to read this, but then you offered for me to read it, given my British accent. So do you want to give a sense, like kind of a context of who this person is? And
yes.
What they're writing about?
It was written to a fellow named John Flynn, mm-hmm. and he was from a place called Waterford, Ireland. Mm-hmm. He had signed up with the Hudson's Bay Company. He was sent to the western part of the United States near the Columbia River on the west coast of the U.S. This is a letter from a friend of his named Henry Ridgway.
Okay. So the letter is dated January 29th, 1833. Dear John, a short time ago, I wrote to Mr. Smith, the agent to the Hudson's Bay Company at his office at Threadneedle Street, London, to know whether you were living or not, or where you were when they last heard, and he informed me that you were well and on board on one of their ships at Columbia River. I now write a few lines to tell you of your family. Your mother sends a letter with this, which will also inform you. Your father died last September, and your brother Nick also a few days after him, of the cholera morbus, which complaint raged here in Ireland and England this summer and autumn very severely and took away rich and poor without distinction. And then Henry goes on to write that his own father dies as well, and then Henry ends the letter to John with this. I will do what I can for your mother, but I have a great many looking to me since my father died for support, and it is hard for me to make out living for all of them. Should you come home, we should be glad to see you. In the meantime, I remain your friend, Henry Ridgway. So sad, because the whole letter is basically informing him of all the tragedies and all mm-hmm. the deaths of his family member. To get that in one letter, I can't imagine.
Well, and then to know, too, that your mother is now destitute, because this is in the days before a social safety net. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't a system to ensure that his mother wasn't left destitute by the fact that, you know, her supporters had died. And so what Mr. Ridgway was saying basically is, please come home, look after your family, you know, make sure that your mother doesn't die in poverty. And unfortunately, we don't have an answer, because although Judy Beattie was able to determine that John Flynn did come back to London, we don't know if he actually came back to Ireland. He may have simply just started shipping out of London and never came home, and his mother therefore died in poverty. It's one of the unanswered mysteries of this book, but a fascinating one nevertheless.
How can people see these letters?
Well, there's two ways, really. One way, of course, is to go to the Hudson's Bay Company archives. They are here in Winnipeg. It's a wonderful collection, and people who are really keen to see them could see the originals, but there's a lot easier way. So back in 2003, Judy Beattie, along with a woman named Helen Buss, published most of the letters, actually, along with the notes, so that you know, for example, what happened in some cases to the people to whom they were attended. So it's a wonderful look at the lives of poor people. They are often not well preserved in history. The lives of women, not well preserved in history. So this book, this collection of letters, provides an absolutely unparalleled look at the lives of people over 160 years ago.
Such an insight. Mm-hmm. Gordon, thank you for this week's Band of Manitoba. Fascinating. Let's talk about next week. What's your clue?
Well, of course, we're in the age of consumerism where we have Black Friday and Cyber Monday, where, of course, we go online, for example, and buy all kinds of goods. Well, the equivalent item from the past was the Eaton's catalog. And so no matter where you lived, you know, you could be assured of all kinds of shopping opportunities through the catalog. You could buy food, clothes, appliances. Well, in fact, you could even buy plans and the materials to build an entire building. So next week, we're going to talk about Eaton's buildings and specifically an abandoned specimen that's lying forlorn north of Swan River.
Looking forward to it, Gordon. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Nadja.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.